Session number 16723, George Lambert, Reel 7.
Mr. Lambert, Reel 7. What do you recall of your landing on the Sicily beach head?
Well, we landed on Avola Beach. And, of course, it was just a question of getting us forward as fast as you possibly can.
You say that you were scattered. Was that where you personally were supposed to land, or...?
I'm not quite sure how they're doing this, but I know that was it was Avola Beach, but I think we landed a bit further down than what we should have done.
Was anything happening? Was any fire coming in from the...
Not a lot. Not what we're doing. There's got to remember the four companies in front of us, but not a lot. Not as far as we were doing. And then it was... Start to move forward the next year.
Did you see any Italian civilians at this point? Or
Sicilians? Little kiddies, yes. Sling them a little bit of chocolate or something, you know, doing.
There wasn't any signs of animosity?
No. We'd been on the move for, I don't know whether it's the first day or the second day, but who should come through us, but... To go forward was old Monty on his duck, or his jeep or whatever it was, and he was throwing cigarettes and everything out to everybody. And well, we all knew he was a non-smoker and against cigarettes and everything, but he was throwing these cigarettes out. And then when we opened them up, we found they were a present from the blind. But that's.
Had the men formed an opinion of Montgomery by this stage?
Yes and no.
What was the general opinion held?
I suppose that some of the lads thought they were being used, you know. Of course, it's like football, isn't it? You've always got to play your winning team.
You begin to feel at this stage that you're always at the sharp end.
Yeah, doing well. Moving further on in that line, just as I say, we were trailing on behind the boys, and he eventually got to Catania, Plimasoli Bridge. Well, there was a hell of a battle there. Boys was involved, bridge was taken, bridge was lost,
What was your role there?
Well, I think the only thing I did there was that two or three of the lads got together and crossed the water underneath the bridge and strung a rope from a tree back to a tree to form a handrail so that any of the lads that was wading through the water could use that as a guide in doings. And that was done.
And this would be done under enemy
observation
and fire?
Yeah. And then, of course, as we dropped back again to where we were, it was a question of the boys took a bit of a hiding there, and I buried quite a hell of a lot of lads there. So that's when I came.
Do you recall the scene at the bridge?
Sorry?
Do you recall the scene at the bridge when you came in to do this burying?
Not really, because burying the dead and moving about was mostly done. What you would do is wander out at night time to find somebody and then mark them. Then we'd have to try and bury them the next day, or try and bury them then.
What is the process? I know it's a sensitive area, but what is the process of burying someone? You come across a body, what do you do then?
Well, the only thing you can do is you take his dog tags off and just dig the hole and bury him.
Do you search the rest of his pockets and things like this?
Took them out to hand them to the officer so that he could pass anything back on again.
Was there any, not necessarily being yourself, of course, was there any things taken out of the body that would be kept by the person that would be taken out in that sense?
I wouldn't think so. Not at Dunbar, going on. Don't think so. But we did hit an area whereby there was quite a lot, and there was far too many for us that brought the REs came in and dug us a hole, and the bodies were laid in doing this. And
did you wrap the bodies something, or were they just in as they were?
No, just as they were doing. And one of the well-known characters was buried at that particular point. Wasn't a Durham, he was an East York man. And it was Hedley Verity, the cricketer.
How come he...
I don't know. I'm going to...
So far as I know, the East Yorks weren't involved in that battle.
No. Hedley Verity.
Did you bury him? Did you bury Hedley Verity?
No, he was there when we were doing, so I just gave it to us.
So you hand the little neck dog tags to the officer. Does he make a list of the names so that you know who was where?
Yes, I would imagine so. I mean,
you didn't do that.
They wanted all the information they could send back to the bereaved. They don't have the wedding, so.
It must have been a pretty harrowing job, as the bodies must have been in a, some of them must have been in a dreadful way.
I got into a state whereby I wasn't a drinker, but I did drink a hell of a lot of wine then. And I was brought up by the padre and had to go in front of me, the quartermaster. I had a drink or two, and I wasn't particular what I said. And I was taken to task on that a couple of times. But at the end, I think the wine did me the world of good, because I think that a lot of lads was going down with malaria, and I found out that I didn't get it, and I thought, well, you know, I think it must have been all the locals drank the wine, and they never got malaria, so I think it might have had some effect on that risk, but that's it beside the point. But yes, I must admit there was two or three times that I was a little bit naughty with the padres.
Do you ever get used to burying people?
It just comes out doing.
There must have been quite a number where you just couldn't even recognise them all. They weren't there holy, might say. What happens then?
You had to just say, well, this is another one. You know, you couldn't.
Did some people find it more difficult than others to bury bodies?
Well, because you say, we've got this job to do. Oh, Christ, not us again, is it? You know, don't. But it had to be done. It was a job that had to be done. So, but that was one of the worst areas for us for that.
Did you use your crosses? Had you a supply?
Oh, yes, I had all the crosses there. They were doing that.
Battlefield clearances, well, not so much battlefield clearances. There must have been lots of stuff lying around. Did you get involved in picking it up or clearing it, or was that part of your task?
No, we just moved. Just moved on all the time, didn't know, Jones.
It was pretty tough going up the coast.
Yeah, well, it was for the boys, you know, doing that. But as I said before, when you said was doing the 51st Highland Div got the credit for Primosoli Bridge, where it wasn't them, it was the old 50 Div that said it. It was the local home press, I think, that gave them all the glory, but it was 50 Div that...
The terrain, what was it like that you were now moving through? You've been used to the desert, of course, wide open spaces. What was the terrain like in Sicily?
Well, it's just, well, the terrain's house to house, but once it broke through there, he started to move back. I think there was very little It might have been at Catania itself, but after that it was, they kept on pushing them back to the ground to Mersa, Messina. But I never got up as far as Messina. I think I got up as far as a little place called Tioramina. That's where we were based.
Was he mining the roads and blowing
the bridges? No, he didn't.
He didn't have any problems with that.
I think the question was that I don't know whether we could have been at Messina, Messina before the Yanks or not. I don't know, but the Yanks got into Messina.
No other memories of that advance up the coast?
No, that's what I say. We seem to bog down at a place called Tioramina. It's a beautiful spot.
Were you in a rest situation there?
Yes, Dunes. We were there for quite a while. Well, Dunes. And another thing that seems funny, but we were on the canvas and that at Tioramina. And rest period, and there's a message came down to our headquarters, where we were, and said, "Have you got any bodies down there? What for?" At brigade headquarters, Gracie Fields was singing. Nobody turned up, so I had to put some bodies in transport and send them back, send them up to listen to her. Nobody turned up.
Was that bad organisation?
No, because she'd married an Italian.
Oh, so she was. That was quite. There must
have been a certain amount of influence.
So at the end, it became a duty rather than a.
Yeah, doing that. I had to. Have we got any bodies? Yeah, put them on, send them down. Gracie Fields was there. Nobody turned up.
You lost a lot of men at Primosoli, particularly. Were you getting any new drafts in?
Not really. We didn't get any more then. We just played about, normal routine, daily routines, getting organised. And of course, as I say, Messina had fallen. And there was a question of going over to Italy. Well, what's going to happen? We don't know. There was more rumours here, there was rumours there. And we're going to do this, we're going to do that. So the next thing was that we got to Syracuse. Who should come and say this but Monty himself. And we're all paraded up and said, there's all sorts of rumours going around, what you're doing, what you are doing. Well, he says, from now on you can keep your mouth shut. That's what I'm asking you to do. You're going home. So, well, that was a great relief, going home. Well, at least we're not going to Italy, And on the boat, eventually, and back home.
The boat you went on, what were the conditions like?
I came back on, Sibergier. It was a Dutch ship. And I don't know whether I was given to understand that Sibergier means in Dutch ghost. I came back on that one, and we were coming through towards Jib when there was an alarm. And we got chased with a sub, but fortunately for us, I think they got the sub. And then we never had any more, but it was just plain sailing home.
Do you recall what time of the year this was?
Well, we must have left early, around about early November or early October or something, because we must have landed in England somewhere in the region at the end of October. So it must have been. We've got a quiet ride home, as I say, and we have never had any bother.
Must have been a tremendous feeling to know you were going home after being abroad for so long.
And I think when we arrived into Gourock, there was a boat standing in the way of our dunes. And we were held back for 24 hours while this ship was unloaded, and it was unloaded with the Americans. And the boys took umbrage to it. Right, you know, everybody took umbrage. Christ, you know, dunes. They were landed in front of us, and dunes. And anyhow, eventually we were disembarked and put onto.
How did the men show their
We'll have a pint tonight, as I say, and as you know, glad to get back and Jones. And we travelled all night after we disembarked on the train. We travelled all night through the dark. And I lived at Chesley Street then. I'm looking out the windows when we're coming down and saying hello, ma'am, in the dark. We went to Saffron Walden. And you know, that's when we had the Pioneer Battalion, which was completely different to us. They were our nursemaids, as I say, and he's bringing our breakfast to bed and looking at us for the first day and making sure we'll be doing this.
This was the Pioneer Regiment.
There's the Pioneer Regiment boys. They were the ones looked after us for a while, bring our breakfast to bed and one thing to the other. A welcome home thing.
Was it a tented camp that you were in? What kind of a camp were you in?
Yeah, Nissen Huts. All Nissen Huts.
Were you getting concerned that you'd been away so long? What was the question?
Well, the question was then, it was on the board that, on DROs, that we were going to be fourth line of defence for Normandy. So we knew that. We weren't finished, like, you know, that they're doing. But it was a question then of getting organised for to give. Everybody was going to get 28 days leave. And it was, when it come to the first day out, nobody was allowed out until they got the 8th Army ribbon up. And, of course, you had to parade with this to make sure you had it in the proper place doing this. But I was more content and wanted to be home that I assisted in the company office making the passes out for the lads and for everybody, helping to make them out for the 28 days leave. It, I never bothered going down into the town, I'll be quite honest. I wanted to get home, as that was more important to me than anything, I get home. And I think it must have been about 9:30 at night. Again, phone call from the local police. Trouble in the town. And it was, from what we can gather, it was the Americans who'd walked into one of the bars, and there's the boys, and they said, oh, he's a scruffy 8th Army. And of course, it was the scruffy 8th Army up the whole balloon went. And unfortunately, there was two or three civilian police hurt, and some other bodies, and Yankees, whatnot. And then the next day, the Americans come and invited everybody up to their place for a party night for to try and make friends up and make up. But as again I said, I just wanted to get home. Eventually we were on our, got our passes and home, and that was it.
And did peace come between yourselves and
Americans? Yes, I don't. But there's always been that little bit of animosity with the Americans. I don't know why, because going back to Alex, we enjoyed ourselves in Alex, but as soon as ever they landed, they were, what we were paying Akers for, they were paying three or four times as much, and of course they spoiled everything wherever they went, you know, Dunes. But there's all that little bit of animosity, Dunes.
So how long had you to wait between arriving at Saffron Walden and getting your leave?
I would say about 4 or 5 days, 7 days, maybe, to me, Dunes. I got married on the 14th of November. And I was home. I must have landed home November the 1st. November the 7th or something like that, or the 6th or something like that. Because We decided to get married. As soon as I got home, we decided to get married. I said, well, we're fourth line of defense. That's not too bad. We're well behind. I decided to get married. And I went down to the local Chesley Street church and saw Ken Appleton, if we could have a special license. And, of course, when I walked in with my uniform on, his father was a padre in the 9th Durhams in the First World War. So I'm sitting talking to him about things. And, of course, my good lady, the fiancée then, was sitting outside wondering what was happening. Must have sat and talked for about 20 minutes or half an hour before. Oh, we better get on with what we're to do. And, of course, yes, I got married on the... He gave us the 7 days license, and I got married on the 14th of November.
You didn't have to seek permission of the army to marry, did you?
No, no. And
how were you received at home? I mean, you've been away a long
like
time.
Everybody else, when you walked in, they'll say, well, when are you going back? It was a common thing then nowadays, you know. And of course, you walk down the street and say, well, where have you been? Oh, I've been there. You say, oh, Charlie, you know, I mean, you know, it's a common thing.
Was the 8th Army famous and well known in the country?
Sorry?
The 8th Army had a name, a reputation.
Yeah, well, it was the only battle that was going on at the time. The only thing.
Were invited to people's homes? I mean, how friendly were people towards you?
Well, I spent a lot of time, as I say, when I got married, my wife's sister lived at Wrighton, and they come and lived with Ida's mother. Well, we had a week in Wrighton. And I had to borrow my brother's suit to get married in, and doing. And he just said, hang on to it. And of course, we went to Wrighton for our honeymoon. And we got on the train at Newcastle to go to Wrighton. And who should be in the compartment but some young soldiers that had been moved from Cornwall or somewhere up into Prudder, anti-aircraft group. And of course, they were looking at me with a uniform on, with me civilian on, and Ida was keep saying, keep your mouth shut. He was worried in case somebody said something. But anyhow, it all. They were having a few snide remarks about me being in civilian and them being in the army. I thought it would be better judgment keep your mouth shut for Ida's sake.
When you came back from the Middle East, you'd been used to a pretty relaxed way of dress and discipline in the normal army sense. Did you find it difficult coming into the regimented system again?
Never did. We just carried on the same. Well, basically, you know, you're doing, you did what you had to do when you're doing it, but you never went back to that. It was still the war years, you know, still doing.
The bull situation, you know, the regimental system of highly clean brasses and so forth. You never really got back to
that.
Well,
you couldn't do that. You weren't allowed to clean them.
Did you have problems with some of the? Quite a lot of the. Units around you'd never been abroad, so they would be smarter dressed in that way than you were. Did that cause problems?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that happened is that the army closed a blind eye to was they opened the side of your trousers out and put a V in so that you could have what the bell-bottom trousers, you know, so that you looked slightly down. That was happening. The army closed a blind eye to that occasionally, you know, doing. When you went out to dress at night time, you weren't allowed to wear them when you were on parade or anything, but you always had a pair doing so that you could put them on at night time.
What were you doing at Saffron Walden? You'd get back, of course, obviously. Then what started then?
Well, we're reforming up and getting more personnel and whatnot,
Where were these coming from?
Just from the local, from wherever they were. I don't know where they're doing. And we reformed up into, because when we got back off holiday, DRO was altered. The 49th Div wasn't going to be D1. It was going to be 50. And 50 Div went D1.
What was the immediate reaction to that?
Well, The only thing I can say to that one was that Monty was going to come and visit us, which he did do. And we're all, everybody was taken onto a roadway so that he could drive through, you know, and what have you. And we're supposed to sort of half cheer like school children, which was ignored. And in our particular case, we had, when he got through, we went up sort of a slope to get to the transport at the top, and somebody gave the order for to sort of go down the hill as he was coming back. And nobody would get off the transport, tell him to get lost. So the next thing was, there was an issue order from Monty himself, minimise the training, and they realised that.
So you ease back on the training.
Yeah, Jones. Well, you know what the with. I mean, a lot of the lads know what they expect. You know, Jones. But
the young men that were coming in, obviously, who'd never been abroad or never fought. And yeah. How did you take to them? How did they settle in?
Well, they just had to listen to what we had to say. You know, Jones. But as I say, that was mostly company stuff, Jones.
What were you doing? What was your role in all this training? And
well, we're just doing our normal duties until we go down to Shirley. That's where we went, to a place called Shirley, for the normal landing, for the organised there. And then we spent a hell of a lot of time just making extra crosses and making up. And one thing that I did do, we did do there was for Colonel Wood, before I went over, was to, he wanted, on his staff car, he wanted awnings put on. So I had to make a steel framework of little awnings for to fit either side of his staff car. One was for his sleeping quarters and one was for his office on his staff car. And we spent a hell of a lot of time making that up and getting the canvas and sewing it up and making it to fit. And doing that was, you know, we spent a hell of a lot of time on that, as I say. But then making crosses up and getting everything ready and getting the signs ready, little round ones with a TT on and one thing or another, and getting them all ready. And loaded up and then come ready for D-Day, you know. But I didn't, be quite honest, I didn't go over D-Day 1. I went over D-Day 3, I think it was 2 or 3. I went over with the transport.
Were you going through the same training as the other units prior to going on board ships and the landing? They did certain manoeuvres coming in from the sea and landing on beaches, didn't they?
No.
You didn't have to go through that?
No. We were... At least I never was in. We were never involved as a platoon.
So most of your work was, again, painting signs and arranging signs, as you say, crosses, and any jobs that were handed round to you for the colonel did. Yeah. What was Colonel Wood like?
Well, there again, the only time that she sort of involved with him was saying, well, I want this, you know, doing, and I would like this. And so give him an idea of how we'd do it and one thing and another, and then he would come and have a look and say, oh, well, you're doing all right, you know, doing. Anyway, we've got the thing finished.
Was he a respected man within the whole unit?
Well, you had to respect any officer that was in front of you. If you didn't, you couldn't tell him.
Was there any officers bearing in mind all that you'd been through and who were still with you, of course, were there any officers who people didn't get on with?
Well, I wouldn't know, because... No, I wouldn't like to commit myself on that one, because everybody has... No, I wouldn't like to commit myself on that one.
But your own officer, their own...
I mean, we as a platoon, and we got on quite well with the ones. All of us, everybody has a fault. And
characters amongst the
loads
men.
Of characters.
Do you recall any?
I can recall one which had nothing to do with us, but back in the desert, we had a a chap came to us and he took over the Kerry platoon, which had nothing to do with us, but he's as a character. He was on the keys now, and he got badly hit, he got hurt in the face, and he had to have a bit of work done on that. And he came and joined the battalion and joined the company, and his opening remarks to the platoon were apparently, "My name is Worrell, spelled W-O-R-R-E-L, not W-O-R," doing always it was, because there was already a Worrell in the company, but one was A and one was E. And he says, "I've got a debt to pay, and you buggers is going to help us to pay it." And that was, you know, that them's the thing.